Right, thanks very much. Actually, I hope you can all hear me properly, because I'm not. I'm usually used to just speaking loudly right to the back of the room anyway. And I'll, okay, well, I should start by thanking the organisers for the opportunity to give this talk, which is very much appreciated. It's certainly been an excellent conference so far. What I'm going to report on is ongoing joint work with Ulrich Kreimer on so-called braided homology of quantum groups. And, I mean, with certain emphasis on the ongoing, in that, I mean, as I said, this has been an excellent conference, and there's been a number of very useful discussions already with people this week on the subject of this work, and certainly I hope this will generate some more comments. So what I'm going to talk about, I mean, the motivation for this work was some previous papers by two people, first of which is a paper by Majid and Akrami, dating back to 2004, on so-called braided cyclic cohomology of associated to a so-called ribbon algebra in a braided monoidal category. Okay? And going back earlier than that, there was a separate paper, separate disjoint work by John Byers called on subject of postural cohomology on a braided tensor category. Okay? So when one became interested in these theories, one to a certain extent thought that they would be very closely related, which to an extent is true, but also, in a sense, it turns out that they go in different directions. So, I should put these in there. That's better. Okay. So, outline of this talk is going to be as follows. Okay. So, I want to start off by giving you the background on algebra objects in braided monoidal categories. Then I want to define this braided cyclic object, which was defined by Majid and Akrami, associated to a ribbon algebra in a braided monoidal category, okay, which leads to braided cyclic homology. Then I want to talk about how ideas of Majid and Akrami, in particular the idea of a so-called ribbon automorphism, can be applied to the constructions that Byers tried to define to make them work in full generality. And then what I want to say is that, I mean, in some ways this work is very much in the spirit of the previous talk, in that one was, in a certain extent, wanted one's homology theories to be sort of computable. I mean, in some ways to say, I was a very concrete-minded mathematician, and one simply wants to know what these theories are telling you for concrete examples. Okay? Right. So I'll start off with, by reminding people about basic definitions of monoidal categories and so on. So hopefully we can go quite quickly through this. So, starting data of a monoidal category is simply a category C equipped with a functor denoted by the tensor, which associates to any pair of objects U and V in the category a new object U tensor V. Okay? And there's this functor, we want a natural isomorphism of functors which allows rebracketing of tensor products, the so-called associators. Okay? So in particular, whenever we have three objects V, W, Z, we can write a object V tensor W tensor Z without any ambiguity of bracketing. Monoidal category also contains a unit object, which would denote by 1, and this is the property that if we take any object V in the category and tensor it on the right or on the left by the unit object, that's naturally isomorphic to the object V in the category. Okay? And these all obey various consistency conditions, which I'm not going to spell out explicitly. And basically, throughout this talk, we'll also assume that our categories are abelianoidal in that the HOM sets between objects U and V are abelian groups, so that composition and tensor product of morphisms are bilinear. So, braided monoidal category is a monoidal category C plus a braiding, i.e. functorial isomorphisms from an object V tensor W to W tensor V, for every object in the category, for every pair of objects in the category. Okay? So if we look at some examples now, and first of all, very basic, simple-minded example would simply be the category of K vector spaces over some ground field K with the usual tensor product and with the braiding just being given by the flip of a tensor product. Okay? And this is a monoidal category. The unit object is just a ground field. Now, secondly, I mean, the basic motivational example which one wants you to bear in mind throughout this talk is simply if we take Hopf algebra H, then the category of right H co-modules over that Hopf algebra is a braided monoidal, is a monoidal category. Okay? If we have two objects U and V which are right co-modules, then the tensor product U tensor V can be given the right, given, sorry, the diagonal coaction. And the unit object in this category, again, is the ground field with the trivial coaction.
This in general is not graded.
Yes. So you have, So in general, that's not braided, but in the setting of a so-called co-quasi-triangular hot boundary, it is braided. So we'll recall that, a co-quasi-triangular hot boundary H means a hot boundary equipped with a so-called universal R-form and invertible bilinear form on the hot boundary, which satisfies various properties that I'm not going to spell out.
This is a crucial point. So, in which context shall we be talking? In the braided context or in the general context of alpha-algebra?
We're gonna talk in the context of braided monoidal categories, but I think to make things concrete, we can simply think about the category of right co-modules over a co-quasi-triangular hot algebra throughout.
Yeah, but just to say that the theory is very general, because any hot algebra gives rise to a braided category of the Drinfeld modules, which is the quantum double of the hot algebra, or the co-double, and that one is co-quasi-triangular. So you lose nothing by this restriction. You understand? Any hot algebra which is not co-quasi-triangular generates, in some sense, a co-quasi-triangular one. The precise sense is that the category of the Drinfeld modules over the hot algebra is a braided category. So you will always get, essentially, this definition also includes any hot algebra by doubling it.
But then it's a completely different category. One thing is that the Drinfeld modules are a braided category. What we are interested in is four-module algebra.
Yeah, sure. I think it's important to have the discussion at this point, because you see, what is at stake is a good cohomology theory for alpha-algebras. So, I want to know in which category you want to work. We saw, for instance, in the...
Okay, so I think, as I'm going to define, the precise category of theoretic sitting is explained very clearly in Majid's paper with Akrame, okay? And for those of you unfamiliar with this, it's enough to stick to the setting of co-quasi-triangular hot algebras, and we'll try and explain somewhat how more generally constructions work out. Okay? So, I should say, in this... Okay, so if we have a co-quasi-triangular hot algebra, then one can induce a braiding on the category of right co-modules by using the coaction together with the universal R-form. Okay? And the common... the notation we're going to adopt from this point on is the pictorial notation for morphisms in the category, okay, which is explained by Majid and various other people, is completely equivalent to doing things algebraically. Okay, so for a pair of objects V tensor W, we'll represent the morphism given by this braiding, this isomorphism from V tensor W to W tensor V. Morphisms are going from top to bottom down the page, and the braiding brings this strand representing V over the top of the strand representing W. Okay? And you can see in general these two pictures for phi and phi inverse are not the same, so the braiding squared is generally not the identity. Okay? Now in some ways you'd say, this setting of braided of monoidal categories is the natural setting to talk about algebras, and in particular an algebra object in a braided in a monoidal category is simply an object in the category with a morphism from A tensor A to the algebra, so-called multiplication, which is associative in the obvious manner. And we also have a natural morphism eta, the so-called unit morphism, from the unit object into the object A. Okay? And these are denoted very...
You don't need braiding.
Beg pardon?
Just to define algebras, you don't need braiding.
Yeah, that's what I'd said. Yeah. Okay? We see when we come to defining hot algebras in braided categories, then we want braiding. Okay? So these multiplication and unit are represented very naturally by these pictures here. Okay, we represent multiplication by two strands representing the object A tensor A coming together and one strand representing A. And associativity says that these two pictures are the same. And similarly, we represent the unit morphism just by a strand appearing from nowhere, which is how we represent the unit object. And this bubble eta can be absorbed just into the strand representing A. Now we want one more definition here, okay, which is the notion of a so-called ribbon algebra in a braided category. Okay, so at this point we are certainly using the braiding in this picture. Okay, so we'll sort of pull this out of thin air and then we'll motivate it a bit. Okay, so a ribbon algebra in a braided monoidal category is an algebra object A in the category with an invertible morphism sigma from A to itself, the so-called ribbon automorphism that has the property that if we multiply from A tensor A to A and then apply this ribbon automorphism, okay, the ribbon automorphism pulls through the multiplication in this complicated looking way. Okay? So we go from this simple looking picture here to braiding twice, ribbon automorphism on each strand, and then multiplying. Okay? So the so-called ribbon property, and this turns out to be very important when one wants to draw pictures and untangle things. So in our motivating examples, I mean, we can describe what the ribbon automorphisms look like. Okay? So first of all, in the category of k-vector spaces, with the trivial braiding just given by the flip, then an algebra in this category of k-vector spaces is simply an ordinary algebra over the ground field K, and the ribbon relation simply becomes sigma of A times B is sigma A, sigma B, i.e. sigma's an ordinary algebra automorphism of A. Okay? In the setting of co-quasi-triangular Hopf algebras, there's a well-known, well-studied notion of a so-called co-ribbon functional on your Hopf algebra. Okay? And basically, this is a co-ribbon functional is a linear functional S living in the dual Hopf algebra that enjoys a property that basically ensures we can manufacture a ribbon automorphism from it. Okay? So it satisfies this property. S of AB is this more complicated looking expression involving the universal R form. Okay? Q is R21R. Okay? And now if we have an algebra object A in our category of right edge co-modules, we can define a ribbon automorphism by taking element A, applying the co-product, and applying this co-ribbon functional on the second leg. Okay? And then this automorphism sigma here obeys precisely this ribbon property.
What is the bar?
Sorry?
What is the
bar?
Where? Zero. Mm. Over
the zero, you have. Oh, okay. So, I mean, my way of writing coactions, I mean, I wrote a bar here to indicate that A0 lives in A and A1 lives in H. Okay? Okay, it is a right coaction from A to A tensor H. A goes to A0 tensor A1, and this bar over A0 was a notational emphasis that A0 is still living in A. Okay. So given this data of a ribbon algebra in a braided monoidal category, okay, imagine a primary way to define a cyclic object. I see the first 12 minutes have obviously gone very badly.
It's a mobile phone. He has to answer his phone.
Okay. Right, okay. So given this data of a ribbon algebra in a braided monoidal category, imagine an Akrami Weibull to define a very natural cyclic object associated to this. Okay? So we start off, starting data is ribbon algebra A sigma in our braided monoidal category. We take a sequence of objects A tensor N in the category, and we define some faces, degeneracies, and cyclic operators. Okay? And we'll represent these morphisms in terms of pictures. Okay? So these face operators, okay, acting on n plus 1 copies of A, okay, which we've numbered 0, 1 up to n, okay, faces D sub I going from 0 to n minus 1, okay, they're just given by ordinary multiplication of the I and I plus 1 strands. Okay? So nothing very exciting there. Okay? When it comes to the DN operator, okay, it's a bit more complicated, it involves the braiding and the ribbon automorphism. Okay? We take the first n strands numbered from 0 up to n minus 1, braid them across the right-handmost strand, apply the ribbon automorphism on the left, and multiply things together like this. Okay? Similarly, we can define a cyclic operator T. Okay? Again, this is defined using the braiding and the ribbon automorphism. Okay? We take the first n strands on the left and braid them over the right-handmost strand and then apply the ribbon automorphism on the left here. Okay? And there are also some degeneracy operators that we define using the unit morphism.
Is the ribbon condition important in these considerations, or is it just an automorphism should be enough?
No, I mean, the ribbon automorphism is absolutely crucial. Yeah.
No, I know, but the ribbon condition itself, can you just assume that...
In defining these?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we want to define a cyclic object, as you'll see. Yeah. Okay, so I mean, I think this has become clear from the next slide. Okay, or give us a couple more slides. Okay, so I mean, if we define a what we're defining right here at the moment is a paracyclic object. Okay, if we define an operator B as the sum with signs of these D sub J's going from n plus 1 copies of A to n, okay, then we'll claim that B squared is equal to 0. And what we'll do is illustrate this view in the simplest case. Okay, if we start off with
this
three strands
of the cyclic object.
This
is a completely general fact of cyclic object. The fact that B squared is equal.
I totally agree, but I mean, this is, I mean, I'm simply, we're giving some pictorial justification for this. Okay, so if you bear with the simple-mindedness for 30 seconds, okay? And if we indicate this as Atbay remarked, I mean, is it crucial that the ribbon property is used here? And the answer is yes. Okay? If we look at the simplest example from three copies of A, if we apply this boundary operator once, we get these three pictures here, multiply the first two strands, the second two, and then use this more complicated one using the braiding and the ribbon automorphism. Okay? What one gets then when one applies this a second time is then six pictures. Okay? Apply B. So this is B squared applied to A tensor A tensor A. Okay? So we see we have two pictures here, which are obviously equal. Okay? If we look a bit more carefully, this picture number 2 and picture number 5 are equal, because we can bring this bit down and then use associativity. Okay? And to show that picture number 6 and picture number 4 cancel one another, okay, we need to rearrange picture number 6 to give this picture, and then you apply the ribbon property and everything's happy. Okay? So what we have at this point is a paracyclic object. Okay?
So the ribbon condition that you described at the beginning in the axis is crucial to make the Hochschild boundary equal 0.
Yes, you're exactly right. Okay, and this picture explains why. Okay? I mean, it's like most things cancel out automatically, but you need the ribbon condition at this point. Okay? And obviously this candidate cyclic operator, I mean, if we do it n plus 1 times, generally we get something very tangled up rather than the identity. Okay? So we have a paracyclic object. Okay? So to obtain a cyclic object, we pass to an appropriate quotient. Okay? So we quotient out by the image of cyclic to the n plus 1th power. Okay? So this is the Akrami-Majid cyclic object as defined back in 2004. Now I want to talk about a construction due at Byers, okay, which is a construction of Hochschild homology in a braided tensor category. Okay? I mean, the route into this work was, I mean, it was interested in Majid theory and one wanted things to be computable. Okay? And
do you know any cases where actually this is identity?
Sorry?
Any braidings that this operator is actually power B equal to identity?
Well, you could just type the flip.
No, but I mean, more interesting case.
Not off the top of my head.
Possibly
no.
An effort of unity.
Okay. So, I mean, I think the definition of Hochschild homology is very well known to all people here. Okay? I would take Hochschild homology simply defined as the homology of a complex bimodule M tensor N copies of A with the well-known Hochschild boundary and so on. Okay? It's also well known that Hochschild homology is a tor. Okay? Nth Hochschild homology of A with coefficients in M is a tor over the enveloping algebra AE, which is A tensor, the opposite algebra. Okay? And there's a well-known bar resolution of the algebra A by left AE modules, which are just A tensor N, okay? And then applying tensoring on the left by M, the bar resolution gives us Hochschild homology. Okay? So it's in the setting of ordinary algebras, and motivated by work of Byers, we wanted to do the same in the setting of braided monoidal categories. Okay? So Byers started doing this. Byers did not know about ribbon automorphisms, and actually this makes things work very happily. Okay? So what we're going to do now is we'll define braided Hochschild homology of a ribbon algebra A in a braided monoidal category with coefficients in a bimodule M in that category. Okay? We'll show that it can be realized as a tor over this appropriate enveloping algebra we'll discuss the relationship with it, with the homology coming from the simplicial object underlying the Majid Akrami cyclic object, and then we'll turn our attention to computing this in interesting samples. Okay. Right, so I hope that's clear. Okay. So what we mean by bimodule and bimodule over an algebra A in our monoidal category C, in our bladed monoidal category, is object M in the category, which is equipped with morphisms in the category, the so-called left and right actions, where the left action of A is a morphism from A tensor M to M, and a morphism, right action, morphism from M tensor A to M. Okay? And these, what I want to stress is that these are morphisms in the category, in that if we have a strand representing some other object, we can happily pull this strand across the top of such a picture. Okay? So in particular, if we will say, working in the category of k-vector spaces, if we applied forgetful functor, our algebra would just be a... Sorry, if we're working in the category of k-modules, if we applied our forgetful functor, what we'd get, our algebra A would be an ordinary algebra, and our bimodule M would be an ordinary bimodule, but with more structure than usual. I mean, a nice equivariance with respect to the action. Okay? So if we're given, starting with the data of a ribbon algebra in a braided monoidal category C, okay, and an A bimodule M, we define braided Hochschild homology, okay, following Bayes' definition, as homology of an explicit complex. Okay? And this is completely equivalent to the ordinary Hochschild complex. Okay? We take bimodule tensor N copies of A, okay, we manufacture an appropriate boundary operator. Okay? So pictures defining this boundary operator look like this. Okay? So first of all, I mean, the first term is simply using the right action of A on M, okay? And then we have operators which multiply the J and J plus one strands together, okay? And then one final term which brings the rightmost strand braided underneath all the strands to its left, and then we apply the ribbon automorphism and the left action. Okay? So this is our braided analogue of the Hochschild complex. Okay? We need an appropriate so-called braided enveloping algebra, okay? And what I call the braided enveloping algebra associated to an algebra A is the object A tensor A equipped with the algebra structure with multiplication given by this picture here. Okay? Okay? So in particular, we can see that if we're in the setting of algebras in the setting of category of k-vector spaces with braiding just given by the flip, one can see that, in fact, this is just ordinary multiplication on this loop, and this is multiplication on A op, so to speak. Okay? So, Georgie.
So, if you take the other braid, yeah?
Yes, you're exactly right. Okay, yeah, this is a crucial point here. Okay, it's not originally one thought, one should take some braided tensor product of A with its braided opposite algebra, but this is not what we're constructing here. These are the inverse braidings.
So, when you take another braiding, we take this, we have gained the same algebra.
I've no idea, okay? I mean, we've taken... The braiding is fixed at the beginning. We have A tensor A, and we have braiding from...
Probably take the inverse of braiding. Take inverse of braiding.
This is the inverse of the braiding appearing here.
So take braiding in this case.
Yeah.
So if you just if you draw, instead of passing above...
Yeah.
Just draw this, this line, this thread to pass below the other ones. If you change the order...
I think in general you get a different algebra. Uh-huh. Yeah. Okay. And in particular, okay. So I mean, the sort of natural object you think of is precisely the algebra I think that you're trying to describe, where you braid over the top rather than over the top from left to right rather than underneath from left to right, as you were describing. Okay. But that turns out not to be the correct enveloping algebra in this situation. Okay.
I mean, Bayes in his old paper worked exactly with this other thing.
Yes, exactly.
But he had to restrict to this more
yes,
no,
braid.
This which works in the general.
Bayes worked with the enveloping algebra that is the natural candidate, and he got stuck.
What's the difference between those two?
Sorry?
What would be the homological difference between those two?
Okay, so we're going to, I mean... I don't want to labour this point too much, okay, but what we're going to see is that this braided Hochschild is a tor over this particular enveloping algebra, okay, which is not isomorphic to the sort of one that originally comes to mind. Okay? Now, pictorially, if we have an A bimodule, we can make it immediately into both a left module over this enveloping algebra and a right module over this enveloping algebra. Okay? Okay, so it's happy if we have an A bimodule, it's a left module over this algebra object we defined via this picture, and similarly, if we have an A bimodule, we can make it into a right module. Okay? And this right module construction is slightly more complicated in that one needs a ribbon automorphism here to make things work. Okay? So Byers was very happy with this construction, but at this point he simply got stuck and he had to restrict himself to so-called R-commutative Braidens, okay? Which in a lot of ways would be quite unnatural. Okay? So in particular, if we have a ribbon algebra, any A bimodule can be made first of all into a left module over this enveloping algebra and also a right module over it. Okay? So in particular, if we take n tensor copies of A, okay, A tensor n is a left module over this enveloping algebra via this picture here. Okay? So in particular, I mean, there's also a very natural analog of the bar resolution in this context, okay? We have n tensor copies of A, okay, and the morphisms are completely the obvious ones, okay? And this is a resolution by left modules over this enveloping algebra. Okay? And now tensoring the bar resolution on the left by this bimodule M, okay, with this given right action over the enveloping algebra, okay, gives us that this braided Hochschild is a tor over this enveloping algebra. Okay? And I should say at this point one needs to be quite careful about precisely what categories one's working in, okay? But I think rather than getting stuck on these technicalities, we'll proceed onwards at this point. Okay? So in particular, we'll give a graphical illustration of this, okay? If we want to look at the boundary maps in our Hochschild resolution, okay? First of all, the first boundary map okay, if we want to pictorially justify the statement of a tor, okay, if on the left hand side is our bimodule M, on the right hand side this is A tensor N with the last boundary morphism. Okay? Now if we rearrange this picture a little bit, okay, we can braid things and unbraid them and put in a copy of the unit, okay, we can rearrange this picture to give this picture, which looks a lot more complicated but is exactly the same as that, okay, and then our equivalence relation between this bit, this is A tensor N as a left AE module here, and this bit here is M as a right AE module, okay, enables us to show that this picture is equivalent to this picture, and then when we simplify things, we simply have the boundary morphism in the usual Hochschild complex.
But algebraic proofs also work.
Sorry?
Algebraic proofs work also. Right?
Like I didn't hear the question.
An algebraic proof also works in this case. Like you sure. Repeat the ordinary case, QK for with the
Yeah, I mean, I think the point is that actually, I mean, pictures are, I mean, in some ways, is a much more immediate calculus for computing with. Okay? So what we've got at this point, okay? So to summarise, we've got two competing Hochschild theories, okay? And the first one is this Hochschild homology coming from explicit complex, which I've just described, which was sort of Byers' construction with the addition of the ribbon automorphism to make things work correctly. And we also have a competing so-called Hochschild homology coming from the simplicial object underlying the Majid-Akrami cyclic object. Okay? A point I want to stress is that in general these are different. Okay? In certain good situations they'll coincide. At the level of complexes, I mean if we pass very concretely to A being a co-module algebra over co-quasi-triangular Hopf algebra, okay? At the level of complexes, this Hochschild homology coming from the Majid-Akrami cyclic object is a quotient of this Hochschild homology defined using its explicit complex of A with coefficients in A. Okay? To make that very concrete, if we pass to the setting of simply K vector spaces, if A was a K algebra with braiding the flip and sigma simply an automorphism, okay, then this braided Hochschild that are defined using this explicit complex would simply be ordinary Hochschild of I with coefficients in I twisted on the left by the automorphism sigma as an I bimodule, whereas this homology coming from the simplicial object underlying the Majid-Akrami object is then the twisted Hochschild homology H sigma of I as defined by Kussmann's Mervyn-Tusser. Okay? And as Kreiman and I showed in our previous work, in general these are very different objects. Okay? It's known that if one takes sigma to be a diagonalizable automorphism, okay, if we're working with an algebra on which you can choose some vector space basis so the automorphism acts diagonally on that, then this twisted Hochschild homology coincides with ordinary Hochschild homology of A with twisted coefficients in this way. Okay? But one can also write down simple examples of finite dimensional algebras for which these things are not isomorphic. Okay? And I mean, in previous work of Kreiman, I mean, we're interested in these twisted homologies, and one found very interesting applications of them to the phenomenon of dimension drop in Hochschild homology, as discovered by Feng and Saigon. Okay, this was talked about at length by Uli on Wednesday, and in particular, the punchline of that was that twisting by the modular automorphism enables this dimension drop to be overcome for many quantum groups, for quantum SL2, for quantum SLN, as discovered by Kreiman and myself, and then subsequently by Brown and Zhang, for basically for all Noetherian algebras. Right. So the interest in this work was, one wanted homology theories that were computable, okay, and this is what we're going to concentrate on from this point. Okay? So like I said at the beginning, okay, obviously ordinary Hochschild homology is a tour over this enveloping algebra A tensor A op, and working with explicit resolutions is quite difficult. As Uli described on Wednesday, there's well-known theorem Feng and Saigon, if A is a Hopf algebra, then we can describe Hochschild homology of A with N as a derived functor in the category of left modules. So one can simply work with resolutions over the algebra itself. Okay? If we given an A by module M, we can define a right A module R of M, which is M as a vector space with a different right action. Okay? And then Feng and Saigon showed that in fact Hochschild homology of A with coefficients in M is a tor over A of this new right module R of M comma K. So we wanted to compute these graded homologies for interesting examples, and in particular one was interested in the example of so-called Hopf algebras in braided monoidal categories. Okay? So it's a natural notion. We've defined an algebra in a braided monoidal category. There's a natural dual notion of a co-algebra, and that enables us to define a Hopf algebra, also very commonly known as a braided group in a braided monoidal category. Okay, so definition is, a Hopf algebra in a braided monoidal category is an object of the category equipped with enough morphisms to make it, first of all, an algebra in the category and also a co-algebra in that category. Okay, and these morphisms are best described in pictures. Okay, we know what an algebra in the category is, and now we have a new morphism, this co-product morphism, going from the object A to A tensor A. Okay, and this is in fact a morphism from the algebra to its braided tensor product with itself. Okay? So in particular, if we multiply and then apply the co-product, this picture here is equal to this picture here, okay, which is multiplication in the braided tensor product of A. Okay? And in analogy with normal Hopf algebra, there's a morphism S in the category C. Okay? So if we apply co-product and then S on one strand or the other and then multiply, that's the same as applying the co-unit and then the unit morphism. Okay, and this antipode is a so-called braided antimorphism in that if we multiply and then apply the antipode, things twist in this fashion. Okay, so braided Feng-Saigon theorem goes as follows. Okay, if we have a bimodule M in a braided monoidal category, okay, it's for our purposes it's useful to generalise a slightly different action, slightly different right action. Right action of A on M is S inverse A1 MA2. Okay? And now, if we have a so-called Hopf algebra in a braided monoidal category equipped with this ribbon automorphism, if we have an A bimodule M, we can define a corresponding right module R of M with this right A module structure here. Okay? and then our then actually, I mean, one can simply write down an explicit morphism of complexes between this braided Hochschild homology of A with coefficients in M and with a complex defining tor of...
So this is like a generalization of MacLane isomorphism for group homology.
Passing from M to R of M? Or
yeah. I mean, by module resolutions, you go into R module.
Right, I mean, I mean, on one level, I'm sort of ignorant, and the first time I encountered it was in Feng and Sagan's work.
This is not their main theorem.
No, I don't think they pretend it was. I mean, there were many deep results in this paper, and this was simply a very useful computational one.
I think they explicitly said, some of them are sorry, they simply don't know a reference for that, although they somehow think this must be known to some people. Yeah?
Okay. So, like I said, our main interest in this was the idea that these braided homologies in some ways were natural homology theories for to be associated to quantum groups. Okay? And as we've seen, we have this very useful computational tool, okay, this braided Feng-Sagan theorem, which computes braided Hochschild homology for a Hopf algebra in a braided category. Okay? Now, associated to a co-quasi-triangular Hopf algebra is a natural construction of a braided Hopf algebra in an appropriate category, and this process is often called transmutation. Okay? So again, if we have a co-quasi-triangular Hopf algebra, okay, we have a category of right H co-modules, which as we've seen already is a braided monoidal category, okay? Then the algebra, the Hopf algebra itself is an object in its category, okay, via the right adjoint coaction, okay, but it's not an algebra object in the category with respect to its coaction. And what one can do is simply to pass to a new object, okay, we can manufacture a new associative algebra, B of H, okay, with the same underlying vector space, but we twist the multiplication on this algebra using this explicit formula that I've written here. Okay? And so what happens in this situation is that, okay, if we pass to this new algebra B of H, this transmuted algebra associated to the original Hopf algebra H, then it turns out that this is not only an algebra object in the category of right co-modules, it is in fact a Hopf algebra in this category. Okay? If we do this, if we look at this very concretely in the setting of quantum SL2, okay, okay. So if we take quantum SL2, as I think people are very familiar with, standard coordinate algebra for generators A, B, C, and D, and the standard relations and Hopf structure written out using the standard matrix notation, okay. And it's well known that this is co-quasi-triangular in the and there's corresponding braiding coming from that. Okay? So passing this braided Hopf algebra, okay, one can explicitly write down what this associated braided Hopf algebra is. Okay? We can write down some new generators, UX, YZ, which make things easier to compute with. Okay? And then B of H, this braided Hopf algebra, okay, this Hopf algebra in this braided category has these new generators, UX, YZ, with algebra structure given by this expression, and for reasons of space, we suppress the rest of the co-product antipodes and so on, which are defining the structure of a Hopf algebra in this braided category. Okay? If one now asks about ribbon automorphisms of this braided algebra, then one gets a very nice answer. I mean, basically, there's only two ribbon automorphisms, okay, which are defined up to sign, and in the classical limit Q equals 1, one would really like the ribbon automorphism to be the identity. Okay, so it's much more natural to take the plus sign, okay, and we can see that if we set Q equal 1 and take the plus sign here, then this automorphism will simply be the identity. Okay? Now, since this associated braided Hopf algebra B of H is a braided Hopf algebra, we can calculate these braided homologies using the braided Feng-Sagan theorem, okay, it's straightforward to write down a resolution of the underlying field by free modules over B of H, okay? Resolution of blank 3. So what Pickler finds is that these Hochschild homologies in the spirit of Byers are vanishing degree greater than 3, okay? And then one finds actually a very interesting no-dimension type result in that the third Hochschild homologies of B of H with coefficients in itself, okay, is isomorphic to just the ground field in top dimension. Okay?
I don't see why it is an interesting fact that there is no dimension drop, because at the topological level it's obvious that there is a dimension drop. I mean, if you look at, for instance, SU to Q, you know, the transverse part to the maximal torus is transformed into the compact operators. So this is zero dimensional.
Ah.
So I mean, the dimension drop, I don't see why it is an advantage. You know, I mean, it's something which is sort of obvious at the space level that it does occur.
Right, I mean, we were motivated by our work on quantum SL2, okay, where there was a very well-defined dimension drop when one passed a Hochschild, okay? And what can also say about this is that in this example, I mean, this is a so-called co-cycle twist of a right co-module algebra, and in fact, one can untwist this to get homology, braided homology of ordinary quantum SL2 with respect to some non-trivial braiding, okay? I should say, actually, I've spoken faster than I expected to, and this is the point that I'll stop. Thank you.